Johnny Targaryen here to entice you about a new real estate investment opportunity. That's right. North of the Wall Properties is newly formed, but ripe with pickings. There's all this land, and I don't want it. I never did. I want it for you. I'm giving it away. There's plenty for everybody up here now that the wildlings, giants, and zombie ice elves have snuffed it. Get your mates together, buy plots together, and make a cul-de-sac. Did you get it? I made a little bit of a joke there. Yes, a cul-de-sac. The French say cul-de-sac. I don't know if you get. Oh, listen, just come by and buy the plot. I've got a lot more jokes. I've got to do a type 5 for open mic night.
The bigness of the office, it's the bigness of the transactions, it's the bigness of the deals.
Kind of a big deal.
It's the bigness of the office, it's the bigness of the transactions, it's the bigness of the deals.
Kind of a big deal. I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back, guys. That was pretty dreamy. I don't know how we're going to follow that, because that guy's a hunk.
Yeah. He is pretty dreamy.
He is pretty dreamy, you know?
You see the pictures of him in the table read with his glasses and his hair pulled back.
He's so intellectual. As long as he knows how I feel about him, you know? I'm a little shook.
Welcome to Darren and I Are a Big Deal.
We're a big deal, guys. Yeah.
Season two. This is episode 12.
Yeah.
Tonight, Darren, we are going to be talking about television shows, specifically shows that jumped the shark, shows that shit the bed.
That's right.
And shows that nailed it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, like a sort of a successful completion, if you all know what I'm talking about.
I found to be very difficult. I couldn't find
it
very
was,
many.
It's very hard. It's actually very hard, especially when you try to differentiate jumping the shark versus shitting the bed, I think.
Right, and we'll get all into the nitty gritty of that in our main segment.
Yeah, but don't we have a but first? Yeah. You know.
But first,
yes,
at first,
indeed.
We're going to be doing news, the big deal news this
God,
week.
Big deal news. Scarier and scarier, folks. Only gets scarier from here on out.
Yeah. So, to continue with the trend, Darren, we're going to be talking about AI and machine learning news stories. I've got a vast selection. I think it's happening, man. I feel like the robots are already here.
What, you mean like there's some deep fakes that are happening now as they're occurring, maybe to our favorite comedians and stuff like that?
Oh, totally. So our first story of the night comes from VentureBeat. This is Google AI can now create videos from a start and end frame alone.
Oh,
which means that, I mean, it's not particularly interesting video, but it actually takes real subject matter. It knows the start frame and the end frame, and it can
gets you there.
It can just generate the stuff in the middle, which is mind blowing that you can just take a couple of stills and then auto generate content. And
take the beginning of Game of Thrones where you're walking and there's a White Walker, and take the end where Daenerys Targaryen is dead, and boom, it'll make you a Game of Thrones.
I mean, it's not quite that, but I mean we're on track. I don't know why no one's talking about this. I feel like I'm like the
probably
only
because
guy.
No one understands it, right?
There's robots in the cloud that are going to just auto generate everything. Okay, well here's another one. Here,
well, what will we do? Like I think that's the thing is I don't think anybody really has any answer for that. It's like we've been racing to make all this shit happen for so long, and we've been laughing at the concept of Skynet that now we're sort of in a position where like it's happening.
It is happening.
They'll take away our codes.
So here's this follow-up story. So Fast Company, watch AI turn bad sketches into photoreal drawings in seconds. So this is something I think Microsoft is working. It's called Gauguin, G-A-U, capital G-A-N. And we talked about this a couple episodes back when we were talking about machine learning and the end of jobs. I was talking about how your kid could draw like a shitty horse and then you feed it to a machine learning system and then it would pump out like a beautifully highly rendered.
Right. Because horse. I don't want to look at my kid's piece of shit drawing. I want the computer to make it nice for me because I don't want to look at my kid's crappy drawings anymore. I want to look at, something that's been processed a million times. That's how I'll feel better.
Well, I mean, this is obviously something that I'm going to keep obsessing over and over about because
just,
I feel
I'm just scared and I don't even know what to say. You're just like, oh my God, why?
But, right. What are we going to do? So there's a couple of follow-up points that I want to make about that this week that, first of all, I found a Twitter account that's called The Fakening. Oh. And it chronicles all the deep fake stuff. So Joe Rogan, the Joe Rogan podcast, I think someone took the Elon Musk interview that he did, and they have been adding deep fake videos and swapping out the faces and things like that. So you can go to the Fakening Twitter account and you can just see every day a new post of some deep fake thing on the internet. And a lot of it is, you know, funny, happy. Oh, look, I'm going to put a baby in with a whatever. But, you know, we talked about this before. People are going to start replicating.
Well, we did that. Didn't we do that on the show when we back when we did the live show? Is that we had the thing where Trump had that. There was a video of Trump sort of saying some stuff.
No, it was the Key and Peele actor doing Obama.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. It was, and that's sort of the thing. That's the hook is the fear, because it's like if you can deep fake the president, you know.
What's to stop us from deep faking anything? I mean, right. Scarlett Johansson has been, you know,
deep faking
about
some porn and like
porn. And she's, you
know, just like many other celebrity starlets, I'm imagining have also had that happen to them, and
it's totally crazy.
I mean, mainly, I keep getting deep faked into porn because people insist on seeing me do that, and I have very strict code, you know, and I'm not going to do it. But people want to see me nude so bad, you know, that they're constantly. Yeah, and it's really awful, and you know, I mean, people keep putting me on Peter North, and you know, it's really weird.
Peter North, you just totally dated yourself.
Yeah, I did. That's the biggest penis that I know in porn. So that's where I went with it.
I don't like to talk politics, or we don't like to talk politics on this show. I gotta say, I've been following this guy named Andrew Yang. Do you know who Andrew Yang is?
I do not know who Andrew Yang is.
So he's now ranked in the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats are now, you know, Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden and Kamala
Harris.
Pretty deep
on that bench, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, but 10 down after Cory Booker and whatever is this guy, Andrew Yang, who's been working his way up. And he is the only guy who has been talking about all the jobs we're going to lose because of automation and AI. Like, he's the only one who really seems to be talking outright about this. And so obviously, since my whole life is obsessed about, you know, how these robots are going to be coming and taking our job.
And catching up pretty fast.
And catching up pretty fast.
Yeah.
I have gravitated to Andrew Yang. Now, you know, I don't think, I mean, maybe it's possible, but like, can an Asian man win the presidency? I don't know. And I don't know if anyone's going to care enough, especially since the economy is doing so well and there's a lot of jobs and no one's really worried about it. But, you know, I got to throw down and give a shout out to the Yang gang, because I feel like he's the only candidate in amongst the Democrats who's talking about AI in general.
Who even has this for his bandwidth? I mean, that is an interesting thing to try to bring to the American public, because we're not thinking about it like that. I mean, the only time we've really seen AI is if you went and saw Logan and those like automated trucks were driving, you know, driving like their trucks along, and Professor X had to like get those horses out of the way. Like we don't really think about it, really. I mean, I think for the most part, we can't see it. We can't touch it. We can't put it on a bun and eat it. So like AI for the most part is Skynet to people. And as long as there aren't big Chrome.
I don't think we're going to be identifying the problem as machine learning or AI, but you're going to start hearing stories in the next few months of people that had, you know, I saw a YouTube video of a production company that said that they had eight lighters who were lighting on a scene, and now they're using real-time systems, and now they only have three lighters.
Oh, so right off the bat, just dropped off.
Just 5 gigs just dropped off just like that. And I think that you're going to start hearing more and more stories like that coming out, and people are going to be, oh, it's a really big deal. Use our software because, you know, we were able to save this kind of money and this kind of time. But the debate is going to get increasingly difficult because the jobs are going to be that much, you know.
Yeah, and the only way you're going to have the job is if you're running that application, if you're running that program, right? Because they're going to need fewer and fewer people on set.
That's exactly my point. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's why I feel like we need to talk about it in this podcast. But so we will, of course, be keeping you riveted on these machine learning stories as we move forward. But so
are you saying that it isn't going to look like a Chrome Schwarzenegger? It's going to be like I'm gonna like wake up and my job's just not going to be there anymore because it's going to be part of an application, part of a program.
I think it's entirely possible. So let's take the application from a voice actor point of view, right? Okay. So if someone needs a voiceover and they're like, you know, I really need sort of a Schwarzenegger-y type of whatever. Okay, great. I can go out and find some actors and Darren can put his audition in. Or I could probably use some sort of machine learning driven software and then take, you know, a sample from Schwarzenegger, maybe a little sample of Clooney and mix it all together and then speak what I need to have happen, put it into an audio editor and then spit it out.
And then type the things that I needed to say. And then it says them.
It says them. And
I'm already in post. I'm already in post because it's already
I'm already done. In post. Yeah. I think it's going to look something more like, and then on my side, you know, instead of having somebody model and rig and texture and light a 3D model and then, you know, put it through the animation process, it's going to be, well, let me do a couple of stills, high resolution stills, or maybe a couple of sketches, up-res them, and then have the machine learning figure out the in-between stuff. Uh-huh. And so it's not going to be overnight, right? But it's happening way faster than we really think it is. And I think we need to be having this discussion as soon as possible because our infrastructure has not been designed for this. And you're going to have a whole bunch of super wealthy people who are going to be taking the mass productivity away from everybody. And then the rest
the teams and the sort of the carnival ride of the huge production people, like all that stuff is there'll be room for it for a little while, but that's going to be on the outskirts. What it's going to be people with enough cash to sort of just do it all from their one rig. Like they'll process it, they'll post it, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so. Yeah.
So it'll really be about the IP of your face or the IP of, you know, yeah, they won't even really need. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's scary.
Well, I mean, you can auto-generate a face,
right?
Right. Like if you found something that is more attractive to people based on the data that we get, you know, you capture, maybe you mix. I mean, this brings up all kinds of interesting ideas. Like maybe I take a little bit of Brad Pitt's face and a little bit of George Clooney's face.
But I want him young. You know, I want him 25. I don't want present day Clooney.
Right. Right.
And I don't want to have him there for 8 hours in the morning doing makeup on him because I want him green, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So I take that away.
Yeah. Oh, wow, I mean, man. Maybe.
And then
maybe
that makeup person doesn't get that gig. And yeah, no, it's all very frightening now. I'm very scared now.
Cascading effects.
Yeah. Right, see it.
Well, to keep it light and happy, we're going to move on to television shows.
Oh, You're goddamn right.
You brought this to me because Game of Thrones, a lot of people have been sort of disappointed in the last season, which I've got some comments on myself. I think those writers are taking shit when they don't deserve it. But it did set this off. You came to me with this idea of like, you know, shows that shit the bed, right?
Right. So. Well, and originally, when I came to you with it, I was like, Game of Thrones shit the bed. And then I was thinking about it more and more. And I was like, actually, I'm sort of satisfied with the ending. I mean, you could make an argument. You could make a case that Game of Thrones jumped the shark. It shit the bed. And it finished well. I mean, if I were to just really quick say the jump the shark moment, the jump the shark was when they outpaced George R. R. Martin's books.
Yes.
And they started, you know, they started just sort of character driving it and just sort of moving it. And then I think when it shit the bed was when it became less about like a societal drama about the society of like 12 or 1300, you know, medieval, you know, Europe or wherever, you know, you want to like put that.
Yeah.
When it became less about the story of how society works versus a character driven kind of a show that we understand, where there's heroes and villains and, you know, and also that, you know, we're sort of emotionally invested in who is left, who is lived. And so that the people who were writing the show knew that they can't kill those people. So you knew when you were watching the later seasons that whenever they introduced somebody, then you knew that person was going to die. You knew that your people weren't going to die. You knew that they'd stopped killing off like sort of the lead characters. And then I think for it to be that it finished well was that at the end of that last episode, I was like, okay, they figured it out. Like, it wasn't great. There wasn't a whole lot of dialogue. It was a lot of like, a lot of pictures, a lot of light, a lot of sound. Apparently a dragon never runs out of ammo, and his fire breath weapon can just
go on forever.
Anything, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think though that you're absolutely right. That if George Martin was like setting us up and then doing the bait and switch with the characters, right? Like, that was part of the appeal to it. And then it became a little bit more, standardized.
It became less about like a society where like if yours there's a certain caste system where your baby was just going to get murdered if whoever took power, like they just come by and murder your babies, you know, like that. Like, that first season was pretty shocking.
Right. Well, when we come back, we're going to be going deep into shows that we feel that because it's incredibly difficult to. I mean, I just want to preface this by saying that in people who write television shows or come up with ideas creatively. And then also write these scripts is an enormously complex and challenging process.
And they work tirelessly at it. I mean, the ones that jumped the shark, the ones that shit the bed, and the ones that finished well, all of them. It's a lot of fucking work to keep the bread and circuses for the people. Like it's a lot of fucking work.
But we're going to, you know, that being said, we're going to go in and have our way.
That's right. We're still going to take our dumps and give out our awards.
So listen to some Jen Remington in this little break, and then we'll be right back talking about jumping the shark, shitting the bed, and nailing it.
Yeah.
You were just listening to some Jen there.
And I personally would like to just keep listening to Jen because she just makes really good tunes. You know, if I were to want to listen to more of them, I would probably go over to heydog.com, right?
That's right. That's Hey Dog. It's HEYDOGG.com.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the sidekick thing, right? The tournament of sidekicks.
We did. Right? We did. We had her on and she was great. Yeah.
So I think we're going to have her on the show to talk about sidekicks at some point.
Sidekickery.
Soon.
Okay.
Sidekickery. Also just like, you know, 80s lore. I think she can rival your nerdery.
I know. And I always welcome that because honestly, I only know sort of my little cone of nerddom and I, you know, you need somebody else's perspective because no one's ever done anything about 80s nostalgia before. And here at Darren and I, we're breaking new ground by talking about the 80s.
Unique,
you guys
have a unique focus, right? Yeah. That being said, our new season is now up on iTunes. So if you'd like to, please subscribe. Please follow us on the networks. And then leave us a comment if you would. That would really help us to gain
comment
listeners.
Or a review if you want to say these guys have no business doing this. Let me
that
hear
works
that.
Too. Yeah. So
conversely, if you also love us, it's always nice.
In fact, that's probably preferable. So.
Yeah, we actually.
So, D, tonight's show, we're doing jumping the shark, shitting the bed, and then nailing it. So, why don't we start off by jumping the shark? Let's talk about this phrase.
Right, because jumping the shark has been around for a long time. The concept of jumping the shark goes back to Happy Days,
that's
right?
Absolutely, right. I think that's where it came from, right?
The episode we're talking about is the one where the Fonz cliffhanger, which ended one summer and took back up, you know, when the show started back up. But for 3 or 4 months, we didn't know if Fonzie was going to be able to jump the shark or not. And he did, spoiler alert. And when he came back, people said that the show sort of had lost its teeth because they'd finally taken sort of the street punk greaser guy and put him in shorts and a leather jacket and jumped him over a shark.
But also Ron Howard had left the show by that point, right?
Ron Howard was gone, right? And they, you know, the spinoffs were starting. I mean, Mork and Mindy was out there. Joni and Chachi were having their love. I think they had After Fonz. No, that's After MASH. I'm not sure. But there was, you know, there were lots of other shows. And I think they ran out of people for the Cunninghams to nurture. Everyone
had,
But anyway, right. So they call it Jumping the Shark. Jumping the Shark when the show sort of loses
right
what the show is.
And so before
about.
We getting into shitting the bed, we're gonna talk specifically about what are our examples for Jumping the Shark.
All right, so to kick things off, let me just throw out my example of Jumping the Shark.
Yeah,
and that is let me just start by saying let me kick things off by calling it Jumping the Shark. So my show that jumped the shark for me was The Shield.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever watch The Shield?
I watched a couple of, I think I watched the first season, and it was one of those things that I was watching it on the own without, you know, my wife. So I could only parse it here and there. Never really got into it, but I heard it was a great show.
Yeah. No, I watched it for a while, and then I just started to notice that, and this is totally a dig at Michael Chiklis. And Michael, if you're listening, I don't mean anything in your world, but I did notice that, like, as the executive producer frequently became more and more Michael Chiklis, is that he was running the show. I noticed that there was a lot more like one show ass would show up, and it would be like a hot chick that Michael Chiklis would sort of rub around on. And the show was about sort of the strike team and how the strike team was going in to sort of, you know, sort of get whatever they could, follow the money train and like, you know, have a good time and still be bad guys. And I just noticed that there was this segue that would just happen where there would just be like some hot chick would show up and like, oh, that's so weird. She would be totally into Michael Chiklis, who was Vic Mackey. And yeah. I don't know. For me, I was just like, I get it. I get what this show's about. And then the show just sort of started to devolve, and somewhere in the mid season there, it just turned into like one big
when
Michael Chiklis. I'm going to give it, I can't say when it was, because it's been years. I'm just sort of going off of memory. But if you were to get in there, I think I maybe made it in like two or three seasons before I was like, oh, here's like another hot chick that's going to bone Michael Chiklis. And I don't need a big profile of him making out with anybody.
I feel like that's probably a pretty good rule of thumb for shows that jump, because going two or three seasons in, you start to run out of content at that point. Like, you've kind of done your bigger arcs. You've known what the characters are. You're sort of starting to run out and you're kind of clutching at straws. And
which was a good pilot, and there was an idea, and then maybe it was a movie when it first started, but somebody said, you know what, the content these days, you got to have 13 episodes. So you upcycle it, you know, you make it a bigger thing where you explore everything.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you eventually do run out of stuff. And most things only have a couple of seasons in them, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my shot. I'm blaming it all on Michael Chiklis.
All right. Okay. That's good. Okay. So my Jumping the Shark, and there's a lot of them, but I tried to think about what was the one that I felt the most sort of pain from. And I got to say, it was The West Wing. So I was a huge, huge fan of The West Wing. Aaron Sorkin, I just thought was, and I think really that was the problem, is that he just devolved into his coke problem. And I think he got booted from the show.
Yeah, and no, that's right.
I remember specifically because I was in grad school at the time, and I couldn't wait for the next West Wing or whatever. And I saw a commercial teasing it. This is when they would tease shows. This is before we would
people would tune in. People, this is back in the day when people would tune in at a certain time.
Right. And so it was NBC was like, you know, tonight on a very special West Wing. And then like they cut away. And he's like, sir, an asteroid is on the way to. And I was just like, what? An asteroid? you fucking asshole.
they Armageddon deep impacted you. Yeah.
I just think that once you had the kind of, I mean, that guy was obviously a creative visionary. And so when you remove him from the day to day, there's no way that you're going to be able to. And that was just sort of my point that I remember just kind of like, not really being interested and starting to be like, okay, well, I'm going to make dinner while I'm doing watching this show.
I'm not going to watch the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch the whole time. So that, you know, very, very simple. Everyone should be familiar with this concept, and I'm glad that we started with Jumping the Shark.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about shitting the bed.
Shitting the bed.
What does it mean to shit the bed versus Jumping the Shark?
OK, okay, well, I think you know, there's you could say that shitting the bed is sort of when you really have run out of everything, but the show is going on now. It's like three or four more seasons or whatever. Like I think that's fine to say. What I think shitting the bed is that when the usually shows are about one person. You know, it's usually like one person's reaction to the world or a team or, yeah. You know, however it is. I mean, you have an ensemble cast, but it's usually, but so, and I'll get to my point, but I think it's when that character no longer is doing what it started out doing and is doing something so beyond what they started doing that it's shit the bed. They've acknowledged that they have nothing more to say and they've started almost another show. So, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure if that quite nails it, but it's just like you're watching and you're like, I don't even know why I watch this anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like if you were to make the case for Game of Thrones shitting the bed, I think for me, shitting the bed happened a couple different ways, but one way that it shit the bed was when they burned up that little girl somewhere in six or seven season. For a second there, I was just like, you know what? Fuck this fucking show. Fuck yeah. You. Like, I don't need this in my life. The world is a terrible fucking place as it is. And you've just made me invest in like seasons and seasons. And now you've burned up this cute little girl who didn't do anything to anybody. And you're only doing it to make me outraged.
Yeah. There's this great Monty Python routine where, you know, Michael Palin and Eric Idle are in a dungeon and they're reading poetry. They're like, it's a conversation. It's in the meaning of life. And at a certain point, I think Michael Palin turns and goes, waiter, this conversation isn't very good. And I think about that as just like, it's just this sneaking feeling that you're watching this thing and you're just like, this isn't good. This is just not, this does not feel good.
Yeah.
It's like you've been assaulted. I think jumping the shark is you've run out of content. I think shitting the bed is like you've been hurt.
They're bludgeoning you with the show or just the time frame. For me, okay, so let me jump in on my shit the bed is the show Dexter.
Okay. Again, I never really watched too much.
You were never okay. Well, so let me give you Dexter starts off. And I've read a couple of the books. Dexter starts off as a guy who is a bad guy who kills bad guys.
Right.
But he does it in a methodical way where there's just no chance of him being caught. He is too good. He is five steps ahead. He's like Batman without the kill thing. You know, like he traps his prey.
But he's a serial killer.
He's a serial killer. He's a bad guy who kills bad guys.
Okay.
And he was sort of brought up by a cop who gave him a code of ethics of how to function in the world. And so, you know, he has all of these trappings. He kills people. He takes a little bit of their blood, puts it on a slide. He puts that box of slides. He hides it somewhere.
Yeah.
And he never kills like by impulse. His impulse is then becomes like a process where he figures out how to trap his prey, kill them, and safely dispose of everything without anything really happening. And to me, that is good episodic content because like that should draw people in just the same way that the SUVs and the NCISs were the episodic and it just sort of follows the formula where, you know, it has a beginning, middle, and end, the show does. And for Dexter, it shit the bed because at some point, and, you know, they just kept getting renewed for like three seasons at a time and they couldn't keep up with it. And there were lots of things behind the scenes, but, you know, health problems of the actors and stuff like that. But at some point, Dexter's just running around murdering people in like the garages and stuff and like in parking garages and stuff like that. And he lost his way. He was this plotting, methodical character that they turned into a maniac. He was just completely unhinged and unglued. And he was going around just carving people up. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't care about this anymore. And I didn't watch the last few seasons and everyone was like, oh my God, at the end, it was such a crap ending and blah, blah, blah. But for me, the show really ended seasons ago, like a bunch of seasons before.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I think that's a good one. I mean, I can't really relate because I didn't really watch the show, but the my shitting the bed is Homeland. Ever seen Homeland?
Oh yeah. Well, we watched the first couple of seasons, but we didn't. Right. You know, we didn't when they sort of the sort of co-lead was killed off.
That's exactly the point that I feel like it was shit the bed, where you know, we were really, I mean, I was completely riveted in the first season. What a great concept for a show.
Oh,
you
know, I loved it.
Yeah, and this Brody character, and then he wound up being hung. And
he was hung? That's how they killed him?
Yeah. They hung him. He was like hung in a square, in a public square. And I remember sitting with Lisa watching this being like, what is your motivation? And I understand that you're trying to be creative and get a rise out of you and whatever. I just felt it went really badly. And then to reinforce this kind of shitting the bed, I feel like Mandy Patinkin, who was Saul, also left soon after. And Abraham, yeah. And I feel like he was just kind of like, all right, I'm white towel. And so for me,
yeah, if you lose Patink, That show's gonna roll.
But the crazy thing is, the show went on for seasons and seasons afterwards, right? I think it went on for like another eight.
Is it still on? Is the show?
It might even still be on. I don't even know. But I stopped after season two because I was just so offended by that.
It didn't do it in season two. I think they did it in season three, because at the end of season two, like him and Claire, right? Claire Danes, like I don't know what her name is in the show, but like her, yeah, like he's taken off. He's gonna like leave because they just blew up the president and shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So they come back and they kill him somewhere in the third season.
Kill him in the third season. And I think that, or at the end of the third season, whatever it is. The point is, I felt like the show had a radical departure from, the sort of nice trio that they had, which was Mandy Patinkin and Claire Danes and the guy who played this Brody character.
Yeah.
And then when they killed him off, my stomach flipped and that was it. It was like, okay, you know. Time to move on.
Showtime wasn't done with him, though. They put him on Billions, right? Billionaire or Billions?
Yeah, and I have not seen that show. I've heard rumors that I love Giamatti, so at some point, you know, I don't know how I'm ever going to carve out time to make time with it. But
spoiler alert, you're not. You're not going to be able to watch shows. None of us are able to watch shows like we did in our 30s when you didn't have kids and you just smoke weed and just watch shows.
Okay, so let's get to our third category, which is shows that nailed it, right? So how do you get a show to actually nail it? And this is complicated because I feel it's very rare that a show – I mean, we both agreed that Breaking Bad was one that kind of went all the way through the end. But even that –
And it's subjective. It's a subjective thing. Like we thought it nailed it, you know, right?
Yeah.
I was happy. I didn't know how else they were going to be able to end it, you know, because, I mean, they'd taken that show and they'd killed off all the other people, right? I mean, once they killed Mike, you were like, oh, my God, they killed Mike. How the fuck?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what else are they going to do? And at the end, you still had that feeling like, you know, he had saved Aaron, the kid,
Jesse.
When Jesse Pinkman he got out of there,
right?
Like that seemed okay, like because he had sort of taken he'd taken everybody out. He had taken care of his family with some of the money, and then he was going to die.
Yeah. But I mean, it's really hard for a show to get to this point. I mean, I think it's rare. It took me a while to even come up with anything that was along this vein. I mean, I came up with
sort of a tie for what I thought ended well.
I had a tie as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
What, I've gone first this whole time. Let's hear what you got.
Okay, so I have one that I really believe in and one that I just think was really cute. So I'll start with the sort of, I guess, the runner up, which was the newest Bob Newhart show.
Oh.
And at the very end, it winds up being a dream for the previous.
For the previous Bob Newhart show. Yeah, that
exactly.
Is fucking adorable, dude. I watched that. I loved it. It's good.
I don't know if it's necessarily like nailing it, but I just thought it was such a creative. So it kind of gets like an honorable mention as the best show to nail it, right?
Well, that also brings into a Breaking Bad thing, because that was sort of an in-joke, I guess. I didn't buy the DVDs for Breaking Bad, but they did do that. They included, I think maybe in the DVDs, but you can find it on YouTube. But there's a scene where Walter White wakes up and he's looking at his co-star wife from Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh.
And they do a Newhart thing there that I think is pretty satisfying.
Well, you know, it shows how creative that idea. I mean, it worked well in Newhart, but it failed in Dallas, right? Wasn't Dallas like a whole, you know, as well? So that was my runner up. But my main one, and I'm probably going to get some pushback on it because there's a lot of people who don't think this was nailed, was The Sopranos.
Oh my God.
I actually, and Lisa really didn't like it when we watched, we finished up The Sopranos, but right on. I thought it was just daring enough. And you kind of get the sense that they're going to get, you know, clipped, but I didn't think there was anywhere else that they could take the show. And I felt like, okay, I think this is a pretty good play. And so I thought it was a pretty good nail. I thought that was for me, I thought The Sopranos nailed it.
That was everyone had a very big reaction to that. Everyone felt like they were robbed. And I sort of went with the idea where I think, you know, what we were talking about before we started this whole sort of conversation about this is that it's fucking hard. Yeah. It's really fucking hard to make this kind of show, to meet, you know, once the show sort of catches fire and everyone sort of feels like they invented the show and they identify with the characters and that's like their show that they bring to other friends. And they're like, you have to watch this show because it's like a representation of what I think is good.
Yeah.
You know, you get to the end. I mean, there's like a show for the show. There's like After Thrones. There's like a show about The Sopranos and like all these people have all these theories and ideas and, you know, I think ultimately you leave it to the showrunners, you leave it to the writers, and it's their thing. I mean, and they might not know how to end it.
Well, true, they don't. And then also, there's got to be something to about, like, you know, we like mystery. You know, like everyone was really disappointed with Lost. I don't think there was any way that Lost could have saved themselves, right? I mean, once you have that much mystery and those many questions, there's no way that you're going to be able to satisfy that need. So it's virtually impossible. It's like, if you are good enough to be able to do something that is compelling enough to end it, I think that's, you've got to be almost.
Well, and as a theater guy, right? I mean, I went to college for theater, which means I make a lot of money. So my opinion is very, very important. But as a theater guy, one of the things, especially when I was doing primarily live theater, that I loved was that it wasn't so much about the show that wraps everything up in a bow for you at the end. It was the show that raised enough questions that, you know, when you go to have the victory cheesecake and whiskey or whatever you're going to go do after the show, because that's what people do. You go and have a bite, you go and have a drink, whatever, and talk about the show.
Cheesecake and whiskey.
Maybe. It might be. It might be apple pie and, you know, several Bud Lights. But that you were left with things to talk about. You were left with things it had like kicked up the cloudy dirt underneath that made you think and sort of threw everything into, is this or is this? And then you have like an actual conversation where maybe you don't have all of your questions answered, much like life, much like resolutions, much like the beginnings is that like you sort of – sometimes you leave these shows the same way that you came into them. You didn't know anything about them. You come in and all of a sudden you were interested in them and they followed things and there was like a particular arc that made sense to you or they went through a particular conflict where the person won or lost.
So do you have an example? I mean, I gave you Sopranos and Newhart were mine, but
the one that is my honorable mention is near and dear to my heart and it's the show Cheers.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah.
Now, you know, Cheers suffered a big loss when Shelley Long took off. And they had to sort of reinvent Sam Malone's love interest. And then they sort of did. But it wasn't as interesting as sort of like those first couple of seasons, you know. But at the end of it, after they had everybody left the bar and he just closed. Like this, some guy shows up at the very end and he's like, you know, he wants to come in. And Sam Malone looks at the camera, which is the guy, and says, I'm sorry, we're closed. I was fine with that. Like, honestly, I was like, oh, it's just sad. It's bittersweet. But they also had run out of stuff. And because that was truly a situational comedy, because they're all in the bar, like the show is, you know, the show is pretty much in that one area. And so I found it satisfying. But it wasn't the one that I can say was my first place one.
And which that
was? Which was MASH.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Because I I mean, right? I'm like, I'm all get off my lawn. Like all my good shows like happened 30 years ago. Yeah. But at the end, at the end, the Korean War had ended. And in real life, MASH went on way longer than the Korean War did by years. And at the end of it, they all said goodbye to each other in their own ways. BJ Honeycutt makes like a goodbye out of rocks and he rides off on a motorcycle. Hawkeye takes off on the chopper. And there we go. Like we fly out of that world. The Korean War ended. And yeah, I mean, like,
well, that's a good, but I mean, that's an easier, I mean, not easier. It's a, obviously complex to make a very difficult show, but like that, that has an ending built in.
Yep.
It's like, you know, the war is over, right? History ended. And so you, you have that mechanism to be able to end a show.
Cause there you are in armistice, you know, it's like a ceasefire that lasts another 60 years.
Well, I think that's, I think there's great. I mean, obviously we're showing our age with
and just our sort of curmudgeonly, like really like the, nothing else has pleased me so much. And like, and since like 30 or 40 years ago, but I guess, you know,
yeah. Well, I mean, I want to reiterate one more time that I think that it's so easy for us to pile in on television writers, and it's so easy for us to say, well, this is shit and I can't believe they did it, because we're so emotionally invested in it. It's easy to but
because that's part of the, that's part of the gig, is that like those writers have to get your attention. They have to hook you.
Right. Also, you know, it's those writers are told, you know, the direction by the showrunner. It's it's a small collection of people who are basically deciding the fate of a large creative entity. So it's very difficult for any unique individual to be able to predict what a mass audience. I mean, so, you know,
and any writer lucky enough to get themselves on a show, you know, it's not just about them. They have to respect that showrunner. They have to like all, you know, it's otherwise they get chopped and they'll put somebody else in.
Right. All right. Well, that's our rundown. So for a quick recap here, Jumping the Shark, you had said The Shield, and I said the West Wing.
Yeah.
And then Shitting the Bed, I said Homeland, and you had said Dexter.
Dexter. Dexter. I went after Dexter. That? I went after a serial killer for bed shitting.
And then for the one that nailed it, my runner-up was Newhart, and then The Sopranos, and your runner-up was Cheers and MASH.
Yeah.
So
and there you have Rock! It. Sorry.
So old, man. There you have it. There is our rundown of television shows. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we're gonna come right back. Go ahead and listen to some Jen. And
what you're really here for is the Jen. We know.
We just listened to some Jen Remington. You can find out about her at HeyDog, HeyDog.com. And for our final segment, we were just thinking that maybe, you know, we just spent all this time talking about shows that we felt that fit these categories, but maybe there's shows we should talk about now that we're watching that may or may not fit these categories, or maybe just recommendations of things. So Dee, I mean, what are the things that you're watching now that...
We've been watching, Allie and I, cause I mean that again, this is coming from like a person who has maybe enough time to watch a show or a third of a movie or whatever at the end of the night. Cause we're just plain tired, you know? And so like we're not, and we've fallen off the demographic of the prime viewing audience by, you know, a few years, right? I mean, like once you hit 40, they stop worrying about you so much. But like for us, what we look for now is we're trying to find stuff mostly that's A, brief, and B, a comedy. And I don't know, for the most part, we've done pretty well. We've watched HBO's got a couple of them on there. I've enjoyed the first season of Barry. I haven't watched the second season, but I enjoyed that. I think we watched Insecure, first couple seasons of that. I thought she's pretty funny. My favorite thing now is to try to find movies, because I just the whole upcycled movie plot that becomes a season or two seasons, I just find that I don't have time for anymore. And that honestly, the way that I watch a movie these days, I can fit it into like three or four viewings, because we just like by the time I'm not paying attention anymore. Right. Right. It's like 35 minutes in. I can just
I completely agree about the whole thing about comedy and short shows.
Yeah.
And Lisa and I very often. I mean, we were often watching Portlandia.
Oh yeah, I love Portlandia. I think I watched all of that.
Yeah, all of that. Right, and that kind of got a little formulaic by the end. But you knew what you were signing up for, right? It was sort of like, okay, I know exactly what I'm getting.
You're going to watch the dude get himself all twisted up, and then she just got. I think Carrie got funnier and funnier as the seasons went on.
Oh yeah, she definitely came into her confidence. There is a show that Lisa and I are actually working our way through now that I think that fits your bill that I like a lot. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called Catastrophe. With Rob Delaney. Have you heard of this show?
Yeah, give me a little bit.
So it's basically Rob Delaney and this other woman, Sharon something. They are a
don't they meet and they have like they get pregnant or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they meet and get pregnant. Yeah. And it's essentially just them. And Rob Delaney's humor is basically a Twitter comedian who just did raunchy stuff on Twitter, and that is what the show is. I mean, he very often is just like, you know, talking about jerking off or, you know, hey, let's have sex or whatever. It's very, very kind of like raw, but like
at the same point, lowbrow and sort of like, you know, a lot of like dudes can like sort of see themselves as
but it's also very sweet. It's about a real relationship and what a relationship is really about and the struggles of what it is to be married to somebody and to have kids with somebody. And so I find that one is something that we identify quite a bit with. Also, I think in recent memory, I want to recommend the first season of Mr. Robot. I think that's kind of a show that shit the bed in season two.
Yeah.
Or it just they lost track of whatever it was that was the magic. Or maybe they just can't. But the first season was
I was riven by the first season. And then, like, I don't know, Christian Slater's not a real guy. And I was just like, oh.
Okay. Right. And as far as pushing my kids into something better, I mean, we were doing Thomas the Tank Engine and Peppa Pig and that kind of thing. And I was able to get my kid to watch an episode of SpongeBob. And for whatever reason, he became fascinated with Patrick. So now I've got my kid into a complete SpongeBob kick, which is great for me, because now I can actually
You can actually just sit and watch the show, because it's a good show and there's a lot of them. SpongeBob's great. You know, I'm sort of this is interesting, because my son all on his own got into the Magic School Bus, like the old like Malcolm Jamal Warner sort of narrator.
Oh wow.
Like, yeah and it's great, because it sort of takes things in sort of a 90s way and sort of gives a good jumping off point. Like yesterday we were sitting around watching the one about a computer, and they're talking about floppy drives and RAM, and they sort of talk about all the bits of the computer, and which is great, because that's a good way to, you know, in entertainment form, to sort of learn a little bit of something about that and how computers can screw up, and goes into AI, because of course they program the school to sort of run off a computer program, and things go wacky pretty fast when the guy throws in like that it should do all of the things like every minute of every day instead of once a day.
Right.
So there's the announcements, the flag goes up and down, the lights turn on, the doors unlock and lock, and it's pretty crazy. But you know, again, Skynet doesn't take over, or does it? Because you don't see them at the end. No, but I don't know. I think those shows is, you know, you do wind up watching more TV with kids, but it's just not TV you want to watch. So SpongeBob is great. Magic School Bus is pretty good.
Teen Titans too, right? Like you were
into Teen Titans is a great show. Again, though, they are constantly dipping into 80s. Like they're They do everything. They do everything 80s. They do the Transformers. They do Voltron. They do they do all the things that I absolutely have to have. Yeah. So that's why I'm hooked on them.
Well, that's our show this week, Dee. Our newest episode from season one, the Ben Mulholland episode, is now up and live.
It's available.
Just posted it on Facebook. Please.
Yeah, if you're listening to this one, you should go back and listen to that one because Ben. Yeah,
that was a great time. And then, please like, subscribe, do all that shit that you're supposed to be doing with the social media nonsense.
And, do that stuff.
We'll be.
AI takes over your reposting gig.
And then hopefully we'll stay diligent about this. Your support, of course, always helps. So we will see you. We'll see you soon.
We'll catch you guys on the flip flop. Thank you.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.